Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 13 of our live monthly Q&A with Sinton's Wills Trust and Estates team. I'm David Pritchard, Head of Marketing here at Sinton's. Your speaker, as usual in these sessions, is Associate Lauren Code. Usual format, Lauren is going to be answering three of the questions that you've put to us over the course of the last month. Session will last approximately 15 to 20 minutes. So I'm going to pass you straight over to Lauren. Lauren, good morning, and over to you.
Morning, David, and thank you everyone for joining us today. And again, thank you for the questions that you keep sending in. So without further ado, I'll jump straight into the first question, which is, can I limit what my attorneys can do for me if I lose capacity? So if you're making a power of attorney, whether that be for your property and financial affairs or your health and welfare, the general rule is that your attorneys can pretty much act for you in any way that you could. So they'll be able to handle your finances, deal with your property, make decisions about your health and well-being as if they were you. So that is the starting point. However, you can express preferences and or give instructions as to how your attorney should act for you. Not everyone wants their attorneys to have unlimited power over, for example, their finances. Some people want the power of attorney to restrict what their attorneys can do for them, just to kind of keep a little bit of control over their ability. As I said, there are two ways of doing that. So one is to put preferences in the power of attorney, and those are things that you would like your attorneys to do or refrain from doing, or that they would not like them to do. So, for example, some people say you would like your attorneys to perhaps continue the monthly donation to the charity that you've been doing for years and years, or some people say they would not like their attorneys to consider putting you in a certain care home, for example. So they are quite light preferences, they're sort of wishes, if you like. They're not binding on the attorneys, but can give them a little bit of guidance as to how to act. The second way is to put in instructions, and those have to be followed by the attorney, so they will be binding. Those tend to be phrased in such a way to say the attorneys must not, or must do something, or should not, should do something. So those could be, for example, your attorneys must never authorise a blood transfusion, for example, based on religious reasons, or they must never consider investing your money in unethical investments. The kind of possibilities could go on and on. But as I said, there are various different things people put in, either as an instruction or a preference. Now, you do have to bear in mind that the more restrictions you put in the power of attorney, the harder it's going to be for the attorneys to act in your best interests. If you put in several instructions, perhaps you're making it this year, and the attorneys maybe don't need to use the power of attorney for another few years, things may have changed, circumstances have changed, and if you have narrowed the power of attorney too much, it will make it difficult for the attorneys to act for you. So the best advice really is just to think about anything that you feel particularly strongly about. You can put in the power of attorney, but generally it's nice to be able to let the attorneys kind of have a bit more free rein and just trust that they'll act in the best way for you. I should also say that there are certain things by law that the attorneys can't do anyway that you don't need to put in because, as I said, legally they wouldn't be able to do. Those things are, for example, they can't change your will, they can't make significant gifts without an order from the court. So there are certain things that they wouldn't be able to do anyway that do limit their capacity to act for you legally. So moving on to the second question, what does it mean to put our house into a life interest trust in our wills? So this is something that I think sometimes the press pick up on this, and you know, there's articles and magazines about life interest trusts and protecting your house, and it's something we get asked about quite a lot for clients. Essentially, this is a way of trying to protect what for most people is your most valuable asset in your estate. You know, I said for most people, their home is a significant part of the estate that they're trying to protect for their family and future generations. And essentially what it does is, if you have a couple, either married or unmarried, and they jointly own a house together, you can express in your wills that you would like to leave that in a life interest trust when the first person dies. So if we take an example of husband and wife, and we say that husband dies first, his share of the house will go into the life interest trust. So rather than pass to the wife, it goes into this trust. And the trust stipulates that the wife has the right to use the house, so to live in it for as long as she wants to or needs to, but she isn't entitled to the actual capital of the house. So if the house is worth £200,000, she will have her half, but she doesn't own the other half, that £100,000 that belonged to her husband. That is going to be held for beneficiaries who are called the remainder men. And those tend to be children, but it can be anyone. It can be grandchildren. It could be other beneficiaries. So that eventually, when the wife dies down the line, husband's half of the house will pass to those beneficiaries. Now, the main reason for doing these trusts is, as I said, to protect the house for future generations. Because what it means is, if husband dies and the wife outlives him, and she maybe needs to go into residential care, it means that she doesn't own her husband's half of the house. It's held in a trust. So she will only own half of the house in her name. And so whatever happens to the wife, the surviving wife, if she is in care for 5 years and depletes her estate completely, the husband's half of the house is always going to be held in the trust and can't be taken into consideration into what the wife owns. So it's a very good way of protecting at least half the house for children, grandchildren within the will. The downsides are that it does make your will slightly more complicated than a simple, straightforward will, and hence it'll cost more. So usually when you go to a solicitor and ask them to put this trust in the wills for you, it'll be more expensive and slightly more complicated, but it can really be worth it. They are very good tools to use in wills if you are concerned about estate planning and protecting your house. So definitely with these sorts of wills, it's really important that you do see a solicitor about them, because you need to make sure that they're right, and there are other things that the solicitor needs to advise you on. And very last question, again, going back to powers of attorney, is what do you do if you have no close family members to appoint as your attorneys? So many people, when they're making powers of attorney, will appoint their spouses, children, siblings, grandchildren, etc., as the attorney, so the immediate family members. But many people don't have close family members who are alive, or they may have close family members, but for whatever reason, they don't want to include them. Perhaps if the family members aren't very good with money themselves, they don't want them to be able to be looking after their money, or they've had a family fallout, any sort of reasons they don't want to name them. So in that situation, what do you do? So the first thing to say is, you can name any person as your attorney. They don't have to be a family member. So if you've got a very, very close friend who you trust implicitly and you're happy to appoint them, you can do. If you're naming your, say, for example, you're doing a power of attorney to cover your business assets, you can name your business partners. You might have neighbours or colleagues who you trust. You know, you can have anyone, as long as you speak to them about it and both of you are comfortable with the appointment and understand the implications of making the power of attorney, you can appoint several other people. They don't have to be linked by family. If you know that's not an option for you and there are no family members or friends you want to name, you can look at appointing a professional attorney. So people appoint, for example, their financial advisors, their accountants, or solicitors. Many solicitors now have a separate trust corporation who they will appoint as the attorney. So for example, Sintons has its own trust corporation, and many other law firms will do the same. The benefits of that are the trust corporation is a separate legal company with directors appointed. So rather than naming specific lawyers or partners of the firm, you've got a separate company whose sole job is to act as an attorney. But the trust corporation will instruct the law firm to carry out the day-to-day matters. But it just means that you've got someone independent. A company is never going to die or retire or anything like that. So that's a really good option if you don't have anyone kind of close to hand to name. Again, if you speak to your solicitors, very often they can appoint their trust corporation for your property and financial affairs only, and you can't have a trust corporation for health and welfare. Obviously, the downsides of appointing a professional are that they will charge for acting as your attorney. So if the professional is called upon to help you with your property and finances, they tend to charge for doing so. So that's kind of the disadvantage of it. But the advantage is obviously professionals are held to a higher standard than lay attorneys. They should be independent, they should be competent, and they know what they should and shouldn't be doing as attorneys. So it's a really good option for people just to make sure they've got that smooth transition there. So again, if it's something that you are concerned about, go and speak to your solicitor and we can talk to you about our trust corporation, how that can work for you and hopefully get you set up with a power of attorney to give you peace of mind. So I hope that has helped. Thank you again for listening and I'll now pass you back to David.
Thanks very much, Lauren. Enjoyed listening to that one as always. Very quickly for me, as I say at the end of each of these sessions, we continue to work hard to produce, release and deliver useful and relevant content, articles, podcasts, blogs, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And that includes all 13 episodes of this live Q&A session with Sintons Wills Trust Estates team and obviously with Lauren. Popped Lauren's contact details back on the screen there should you want to get in touch with her about anything she's raised today in this session, in any of the sessions, or indeed any questions you'd like her to answer in future sessions. Telephone 01912263807 via email lauren.code@sintons.co.uk. If you haven't had enough from us by that point, you can also follow the team on Twitter at Sintons Law and at Sintons PC. We'll be back with you live on the second working Friday of next month, which is October, live, as I say, 10 a.m. on Teams. So we hope you can join us then. Thank you once again for listening. Thank you once again for sending in your questions. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll speak to you next month. Thank you.